listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Mark Warner. So, Mark, you're actually writing not necessarily a business book, but a book about a business.
The history.
Yes.
The history of.
Of?
Of Imdina Glass.
Fantastic. Tell us a bit more about the book.
Well, in 2018, Imdina Glass becomes 50 years old.
Okay.
So the idea was to write, put a book together about the history of Imdina Glass from its inception to present day. And it's grown from there.
And it's a family-run organisation, so are you talking to the family and
Yeah, it's a family-run organisation now, but it didn't start that way.
Okay.
So I've been speaking to people that worked there from the very beginning, including one of the founders of the company as well. It was founded by two guys from the UK.
Oh. They're actually Maltese, but they're British living in the UK.
Yes, British from the Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they... They wanted to start up a glassmaking company. I don't want to give you too many details, because otherwise there's not going to be much point in looking at the book. they were in the UK and they wanted to start up a glassmaking company and then set their sights on Malta for various reasons, which will be in the book.
Absolutely. So have you found out some interesting nuggets apart from that actually Maltese people would discover about Imdina Glass?
Yeah, there's been quite a bit. In fact, when I set out to write the book, I was fearful that I wouldn't actually have very much information to put in there. There wouldn't be much of a story and that I would have to make a lot of it up with pretty pictures, which I have plenty of. But now it looks like the pretty pictures are going to have to take a little bit of a backward step. Still want quite a bit in there because it's going to be a coffee table kind of book, hardback book, nicely put together, nicely presented. But it's been more interesting as a story than I expected.
So where should I say, have you been to talk to people about Imdina Glass?
By and large, here. But I've also travelled over to the UK as well, in the main to speak to one of the co-founders, and also to photograph a lot of the old glass from the very early days, which he has in his possession.
Okay.
So I went and took over their living room, made a makeshift studio while I was there, the day before they were due to move out of the house.
Oh.
So that worked out well. And even had one of the pieces of glass that I photographed that he had there was a piece that they made on the very, very first day when they fired up the furnace for proper production.
Oh, that's fantastic. So
that was interesting. It's a very humble piece, but it was just interesting because of the story behind it.
Are you still looking for other pieces to photograph for the book? Are the old, unusual collections that people might have?
I've been in touch with some collectors in the UK, and I'm waiting for them to get some photographs taken of their stuff because I've actually had a couple of pictures sent to me that were taken on an iPad, but obviously they need to be professional pictures,
yes,
so I'm just waiting for them to get round to being able to do that.
And so how long have you been working on the book till now?
On and off. It started 2 years ago. 2 years ago, next month I think it is. And it's just increased from there. I was working on it here and there when I actually managed to get in touch with a couple of people from the old days. And I've been building it up as I go along. So I've been writing probably the first couple of chapters are the ones that I've been concentrating on up to now. And then speaking to more people and then realising that I've got to go back and rewrite a load of stuff. So it's been layering. Yeah.
So did you have a structure at the beginning, what you wanted to do, or have you discovered things that have changed the structure of the book as you've gone along? Not necessarily the content, but the actual structure.
A bit of both. I started out with a very clear structure in mind and scrapped it and moved on to another structure, which now seems
recycled.
To be working.
Recycled it.
Yeah, recycled. The old structure I used for something else. Coming from a script writing background, that's very much about structure. So I think it's in my nature to approach it from a structural sort of background.
So with your background, has that affected the way you're writing? Are you writing it in dialogue, or are you writing it as a factual sort of case study about the company being a,
As a story. I'm a storyteller. So a lot of books that exist already about... There's one book that about Imdina Glass, but from another perspective. And a lot of other books about glassmakers in the 20th century, etc., approach it from almost like a catalogue base. So they talk about the actual products that were made by that glassmaker.
Right.
And whether it's rare and the kind of value that you can expect. But I'm not going to go down that route. I don't want to go down that route. For me, that's not what's interesting. So I'm looking for the story and telling the story in a narrative kind of way.
Excellent. And so what had you learned from your scriptwriting background that you brought to the table for this book? I'm guessing this is your first coffee table style book that you've created.
Yes.
So what lessons did you learn from?
Punctuation and grammar. No, actually, for script writing, it's probably one of the last things you worry about because nobody actually reads the screenplay. It was just basically the storytelling aspect. There's actually quite a bit of drama and personal drama involved in the, especially in the early days of Imdina Glass. So it's helped me in a way of being able to write the narrative, dipping into quotes here and there, so first person dialogue from what people have told me, but also trying to protect the names of my informants.
Oh, so do you see this as something that will actually not just be a book, that potentially one day it would be like a TV documentary or something like that, or not quite got that content?
No, wouldn't be along those lines. But it is interesting. I've found more and more sort of personal stories in the especially in the early days of Imdina Glass, when it was being formed and everything. Has a very quite colourful background.
Can you give us an example just of one of them, just a little sneak peek?
Well, one of them is actually quite a sad story. One of the early glassmakers that was brought over from London, he was an Italian glassmaker. He came over with his father. He actually came first, and then Senior came after. And about a year and a half or so down the line after joining the company, he found out that he had leukemia and had to work through that. Went into remission, but then it took a downward spiral again, and he worked at Imdina Glass till the end. Mm. So yeah, there you go. Mm. That actually is a quite a tragic turn of events and a very sad story. But it's those sort of personal stories in the background of the company that have made it quite interesting at the same time.
And do you think the objective of the book then will not just tell the story but give people more of an affinity with the brand? Is that the objective, or is it just a historic milestone they wanted to record it in a way?
It's definitely not the objective, because I'm not approaching it in a way of just a sort of dry recounting of events and everything. I think that may be something that inevitably comes out of it. Just because of the human factor, I want to tell the story of the people behind Imdina Glass and people that have worked there, rather than sort of the company and the cold facts.
So I think it might give us all, because we all have pieces from our homes and our parents' homes lying around that look at in a completely different way.
Yes. I mean, because I am going to feature pieces and from the early days as well, right up to date, and talking about the origins of some of them and everything, even though it's not going to be a catalogue, because they are products of the people that work there.
Yes. So are you in charge of the visual aspect and the content completely?
Well, I have a hand in it. In fact, before I came here, I was just talking to the person who's going to be doing the final design and layout of the book in England. But I've got a very clear direction in the way that I think it should look. Full page image, and things like that of the really nice pictures that we have. It's like one of the images that I've managed to find, which I'm really happy with, is an aerial view of Ta'ali as an airfield, with the hangar that Imdina Glass now resides in and always has since it was formed. So I think those sort of images deserve space.
Prominence, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. they deserve a little bit of space and prominence. So I've had a very clear idea, and in fact, we were going through it when I was on Skype with the guy doing the layout.
So. But you're doing most of the photography, apart from the stuff that already exists.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the photography that we're going to be using is stuff that I have already, because I do the photography there. So I've got a huge collection of it's going to be more a case of what we don't use rather than what we do. And then I found medium format slides of the early days, 1969, 1970. Nice colour slides are really nice. And I'll use the word nice one more time. And and I'm going to have those included as well. Black and white pictures from the early days in the workshop there.
Can't imagine Dina Glass in black and white somehow, but just
challenging. I don't think the actual glass was made in black and white.
Ew, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no. Of course you are.
But so when you are laying out the book in your head, when you're doing your structure, do the images kind of come first because you've seen the image and you know, okay, that I want to write about, or is it that the content is coming first and the image is going to plug in to the chapter?
Definitely the content first.
Okay.
In fact, I've hardly thought about images for particular parts, unless I'm talking about something specific, like when they went to Ta'ali and found this abandoned airfield and empty hangar. So then I know, obviously, that I want those images to go in that section. But otherwise, it's going to be chronological to a certain extent as to what images go in, but I haven't really sort of put placeholders in.
Okay. And so have you written it chronologically as well? Have you started from the beginning and you're working your way towards the end, or are you dipping in and out as you find things? How are you working towards your structure?
Okay. Structuring it chronologically, avoiding a Pulp Fiction kind of layout in the book. Because that would be weird. I started right in the beginning. I actually start from the time when the two men that founded the company went to the same arts college in Stourbridge in the early 1950s.
Okay. And so from there, you've done your first couple of chapters and you're working your way up to present day. There's no starting, halfway through the book, starting at the end and working your way backwards to meet in the middle.
You've confused me myself. There, so I'm sure the readers would be confused. I'm just starting in. It's going to be a linear narrative,
all the way through. And how do you actually work yourself? Do you write in the middle of the night? Do you write at a desk? I mean, how do you work? So every writer seems to put their words together in a different way.
Where I can, I think is the best thing with this kind of writing I've found, as opposed to what I'm used to, which is having a blank page and trying to make a story up from scratch, is that everything is led by the research and talking to the people that I'm researching. So they are, in a way, writing the content for me. I then have to put it in my words and everything, and I want it to read as if it's been written by a human being rather than just a recounting of events. Mm-hmm. But it helps. So I can kind of dip in and write whenever I have the time, whenever I want to, and whenever I think that I've built up enough more fresh research, rather than actually needing to find that time of day where I really sort of feel inspired. When I was doing it that way and working from a blank page, I used to find that waking up really early in the morning and writing at maybe 4 o'clock worked for me.
It does for me as well, actually. I'm one of those.
We're not normal.
No. Dawn writers. So your background, tell us a bit more about script writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I started making my own amateur films and what have you when I was around about 12. With a friend of mine at school. His dad had a cine camera, which we started with, and then he bought one of the first video cameras, and we used to actually, I shouldn't really say this in an education establishment, should I, but we used to bunk off school and go back to his parents' house while his parents were out and grab the equipment and work from a script that I put together and make our own films and experimenting.
What were your scripts about? What were your early influences?
Well, they were pretty awful, actually. The influences, I was actually into horror at a young age. So that's before the BBFC said that we can't watch horror films because I'm of that age, and I was inspired by those sort of things. So it was squibs and blood and then, yeah,
all little boy stuff anyway. So
yeah.
And then you went on from there, because obviously you scriptwriting became a profession.
I went to college to study film and TV production. I graduated from there, but I was already then working on doing some music videos and what have you for local acts and stuff while I was at college. Came out of there and just carried on. I did some script editing and sat on some panels for BBC Films and stuff. And I wrote a number of different short films that we produced, that I had produced, and worked on as a writer and director on a feature film as well, which we shot in India and the UK.
Okay, so what was that film?
It was called The Case, but that got embroiled in, as many films do, in a whole other issue to do with the executive producers producing another film with my producer, and I was involved in all that. So the film actually went to Cannes in 2001, and we had a premiere screening in the West End, which was great as well, and then it disappeared.
Oh no!
Yeah.
But you're still writing other scripts and...
No, I haven't written... I carried on working in TV commercials and music videos for a while, a couple of documentaries, and then sort of fell out of love with the medium and took a back seat.
So do you think that today, now that there's, you know, writing a physical book again, is that a sort of a romantic gesture almost to go back to print? Or is there, you think now with the new online downloading... There's just too much going on. It's a different world.
No, because I think if you're writing, people like the physical. I do. I like the physical book, and I don't know if I'm normal, but I also like being able to smell the pages of a physical book. So I probably do that before I read the synopsis or anything. And if the book smells good, then I can buy it. But I still think that there's a market out there for the physical book, and especially something like this, which is a very visual kind of book, coffee table books. People like to have them. The layout is more aesthetic. There's pictures in there, and this is totally different to what I'm used to. Because, as I touched upon earlier, when you write a screenplay, you're not actually writing something as an end product. People, by and large, some people do, but very few. People don't usually read the screenplay; they watch the film. So that's why I joked saying about grammar and punctuation isn't that important in screenplays, because people don't actually look at that.
So do you miss that aspect of it now that you've started writing again, although in a different medium for a different audience? Is it something that you think, oh, I've got another idea, or this could spark a something?
No.
No?
That's a short answer, isn't it? I had forgotten how consuming writing can be and how addictive it can be. Mm-hmm. And I realised that I kind of had the bug back, and I remembered how it can be that way when couple of weeks ago I thought I'd mess around with a couple of paragraphs because I had some new research and I wanted to update it, and then I realized 6 hours later that I was still writing and I was hungry. So writing does that to you when you really get into it and you get into the zone.
So apart from having snacks at your desk, what other tips would you give to budding writers?
Yeah, but I didn't do that. I kind of went camping without provisions, if you like.
Both the mediums. If you were somebody else was going to be starting on a case study book, for want of a better word. Mm-hmm. What tips or what advice would you want to pass over to people that you've learned through the process so far?
First, you've got to embark on something where I believe the germ of the idea inspires you and makes you really want to get to the end of the thing. Because if you don't have that hunger to see it all the way through, it can be a real slog. And the possibility is that you're just not going to get there. And to have a clear idea as to what it is you want to write. Do you want it to be a catalogue of something? Do you want it to be a narrative? Do you want it to just list the facts? Is it going to be mainly pictures, so you don't need to delve that far into the nitty-gritty, if you like? But you've got to have a really, really clear idea. And for me, it's really strange. I can't write in silence, so if I'm writing at the computer, I'll put a radio, I'll put the radio on in the background,
and
or
listen to campus,
TV,
of course.
Or if I was, especially if I'm writing fiction, when I was writing screenplays, I would actually build up a playlist of almost like a soundtrack, and dip into different tracks depending on what the mood of the scene is, or the sequence that I'm writing.
I started to write a cookbook a bit like that, but telling people what music to cook the dish to, because it just made all the difference.
Okay, that's interesting. I won't ask any other questions there at all, because a couple come to mind.
But with script writing, then, is there a different approach? Because do you always know the whole story when you're script writing?
The general rule that is usually taught is to have everything mapped out before. And I've tried all different kinds of approaches. I've tried the synopsis, then the treatment, and then the little cards or post-it notes on a wall with all the sequences there, and you can sort of pull them off and put them elsewhere. And things like Final Draft, the script writing software, actually enables you to build those cards up and everything. And for me, the thing that's worked best for me is to just jump in there and start writing, because the rest is I can only speak from a personal point of view, but the rest for me is delaying tactics. It's it's flirting around with the story and not actually sort of jumping in there. So I prefer to just get to the end of the first draft. It can be an absolute mess. It can be 400 pages too long, but at least I've got something then that I can start working from.
400 pages too long. 400 pages in total would be quite a feat for me, but there you go.
Yeah, well, I can write about nothing, but that's not a good thing.
So in script writing, you also have to give the direction? Is that what you would do?
No. Luckily, I've mainly written for myself, so I can, because a director's not going to get offended, unless I get offended with myself, which has actually happened. On the whole, in general, you don't give too much in the way of direction.
So it's up to the actor then to...
To the actor and the director, because the two forms of direction can be written into a script, which is pretty much a no-no. And that's, one is to tell the director how to shoot a scene by saying, and then there's a close-up of this, and there's a wide shot, and there's a big close-up.
Okay.
And then the other direction is to give too much in the parenthesis thing for an actor, saying, you know, slightly annoyed, very annoyed, frustrated, happy. You've got to let the writer, the actor, sorry, the director, find the story in there themselves and the interpretation.
But what about the briefing of the character, the composition of the character? Do you tell them who the character is at the very beginning with script writing, or do you go straight in?
Hopefully the script will tell them
as they go
if it's a good script, then they should know. If they come back to you and say, okay, I read the script, but can you tell me a bit more about the character?
Is it a girl?
That should come out in the if it says, and now Claire says. But but in general, you shouldn't have to, you shouldn't
have to
really
do that.
No.
And for script writers, any other tips we can pass on?
Read scripts
to see how others have done and see what works.
See what works, and also how scripts are structured. There's a lot about structuring scripts.
And no, say that again, please.
No, I shall not. There's a lot about that sort of thing in books like Sid Field's book, which some people hold as the Bible. And it's about keeping to the three-act structure. And you know, if the screenplay is 100 pages long, then the first act should be 25 pages, next should be 50 pages,
so
next
very
should be
structured.
25. Yeah. But I do believe that there has to be some form of structure in everything. But I don't think, especially new screenwriters, I don't think they should be weighed down by that. I think they should explore and read screenplays.
So reading the screenplay after you've seen a movie, perhaps, or just reading a screenplay that someone else has written, it doesn't make any difference, you think?
I'd read screenplays of films that inspire them, because they're going to engage in it more that way. And of films that come from the same ilk, maybe they haven't seen. Because it's good to actually read a screenplay that they don't know as the finished product, because it opens their imagination a little bit more, and they can see how loose a screenplay can actually be in the way of direction. Whereas if they're reading the screenplay to a film that they know very well, they're already filling it all in because they know the finished product.
The picture's painted for
them.
Yeah. So just as a separate line, you're quite into the media and films, et cetera, et cetera. But what do you watch, read, listen to for pleasure? Just to give our listeners a bit of a personal view of Mark Warner.
Well, I've got a son.
Don't blame him.
I will. That's what he's there for. But it's true that children dictate what you watch in the end, because you don't have that much time for other stuff. But I'm a big fan of Akira Kurosawa. So
okay.
I've been rewatching a lot of his stuff, and I like to look for films off the beaten track, foreign language films and stuff. Not because I think it's highbrow or anything, but because I find that there's a lot more sort of refreshing content.
Less cliche,
refreshing content. You tend not to know as many of the actors and everything, so they're full embodied characters rather than the persona that you're used to. But having said that, there's a lot of mainstream stuff at the moment that's coming out that's good as well.
And you think the industry is going the right way with 24-hour entertainment we can watch on any device at any time?
It's difficult. I mean, the digital age has changed a lot of things in the way of it's democratized production a lot and everything, and there's a lot more out there, but it can be difficult to access at the same time. They don't get the distribution opportunities.
So it is digging deep.
Yes, digging deep, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's rewards if you do look deep enough. Yeah.
Well, it's been really great talking to you. That's Mark Warner, my guest this week, talking about his book on Imdina Glass coming out in 2018, and also a bit of background about screenplay and script writing.